B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
Saw it for what it was. No, not yet. Too thin, too not strong enough, whatever. But God, is he going to be great. And he hit it right on the head.
I think he started one game his rookie year.
Yeah, he didn't get a lot of playing time, no.
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 I just watched an interview he did yesterday with the legend, was it Dick Hearn? Slam dunk.
Chick Hearn?
Chick Hearn.
Yeah.
Chick Hearn.
Yeah.
Slam dunk. You know, he was the guy that really originated that phrase.
Yeah.
And he did an interview with him, and he was just like, hey, what's it like, you know, playing with Shaq? And Kobe's like, oh, it's great. He's like my brother, this, that, and the other. And he goes, and Dick Hearn, Chick Hearn goes, oh, yeah, do you have any brothers? And he goes, yeah, Shaq. 610-632-0975, 610, because Kobe had two sisters, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
I
believe,
yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, two six
sisters?
I believe so. 610-632-0975. You are listening to 97.5, the Fanatic WPN, Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studio, only from Comcast. 7 o'clock hour brought to you by Univest Bank. Are you frustrated by escalating HR costs and legislative compliance? There's a simple solution. It's time for Univest Employee Benefits. Visit univest.net to set up your free benefits analysis today. On the line with us right now, a man that wrote a phenomenal piece on Inquirer.com. Mike Sielski joins us right now. Mike, good morning, man.
Morning, guys. Have me on.
Absolutely. I was reading your piece yesterday, so we got to talk to Mike. First off, man, can you just tell a story for us of where you were when you found out about Kobe Bryant's passing?
Yeah, sure. I was driving from my in-law's house to back in my house so that I could get my 8-year-old son changed for a basketball game. And then when we, you know, you're stopped at a traffic light, and I happen to look at my phone, which I shouldn't be doing, and you see the news start to trickle out on Twitter, and you're like, oh my God. And my kid is like, Dad, what's the matter? I'm like, I think Kobe Bryant's dead. And we got home and got changed, and I made a couple phone calls, and we got to the game. And after the game, my son pointed out to me, he said, Dad, did you see the kid on the other team? And I said, no. He said, yeah, he said he had a, you know, green tank top on, uniform tank top, and a white undershirt underneath, and on one of the sleeves he had written Kobe. And it's a tiny little thing. I mean, it's a piece of, you know, lint in an ocean of moments and emotions yesterday. But you know, this is why we care about stuff like this when it happens. This is why we care about people like this when they're around and when they leave us, is they have this reach and this pull that is just incredible and so strong. And, you know, here's a little, you know, 8-9-year-old basketball game, you know, 25 miles north of Philadelphia, 30 miles from Lower Merion Township, and you felt it there. And, you know, like I said in the column, I think a lot of people, you know, around the country and even around the world felt that way yesterday, too.
When you think of Kobe Bryant, Mike, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
I think two things, just as a player, a couple things as a player, the competitiveness, you know, you would have this discussion with people, is Kobe really from Philadelphia because he grew up in Lower Merion, which in retrospect seems so silly, and speaks to kind of how provincial and parochial we are.
Yeah, really.
No, Lower Merion isn't Philly, man. You got to be from the city. But, man, was there ever a player who played like a Philly player or was a Philly player more than Kobe? He was so freaking tough and so competitive. And then the other thing is, I spent 25 minutes on YouTube last night watching highlight clips of him, and the degree of difficulty of shots that he took and made in big spots was just breathtaking. Like, I know analytics is a huge part of sports now, and you can argue that, like, his shooting percentage wasn't as good as some guys, and this and that. You know, he would take, you know, he had a mid-range game at a time when the league was heading to the three-point shot. But, you know, if you just love watching a great basketball player do incredible things on the court, it was hard to find a better player to watch than Kobe Bryant.
You couldn't hit the nail more on the head when it comes to asking every athlete that comes through Philadelphia to play like Kobe, because everything was all about winning, whatever it took to win. And not just that, also expanding his game, that little fadeaway that he developed in his career, you know, baseline jumpers, three-point game, defense. I mean, 12-time all-defensive team in the NBA. Every step he took throughout his career was to get better. And also, after he ruptured his Achilles, he came back after that despite already being a 5-time NBA champion.
Yeah, he did. You know, and there was some, you know, mild controversy at the end of his career when he came back from that, and the Lakers re-signed him, you know, to a very lucrative contract, and they paid him all this money under the salary cap. And again, this to me is an interesting part of his life and career and legacy, is that he was in some ways kind of swimming upstream against, you know, the way basketball was headed. It was kind of like, you know, no, the Lakers should cut bait with Kobe. You got to rebuild. You can't keep him around. You can't make your centerpiece player a guy who dunks and shoots mid-range shots, really difficult mid-range and deep jump shots, when he's at this age and when the league is trending toward the three-point shot and the corner three and all of that. But he was Kobe, and it was the Lakers, and that's what they did. And, you know, on the one hand, they weren't very good, but on the other hand, you got to see Kobe play for a few more years and really be Kobe.
Mike, I was talking about the buzz that would be in the arena when the Lakers and Kobe would come to town. And, you know, you get a buzz when the Celtics come. You get that buzz, obviously, when LeBron's there. But I thought because of his local ties, it seemed to me that nothing matched when the Lakers and Kobe came to town. I was wondering if you thought the same thing.
I absolutely thought the same thing, Bobby. And I would argue that buzz went back to Lower Merion. I can remember being an undergrad at LaSalle when Roman Catholic played Lower Merion.
Yeah.
1 year.
At Drexel, Kobe, right?
Yeah, at Drexel. Yeah. It was Kobe versus Donnie Carr. And, it, you know, as a LaSalle undergrad, this was like Christmas, because we knew Donnie Carr was coming to LaSalle, and the rumors of Kobe coming to LaSalle were hot and heavy. And, you know, the buzz began then. And then to have him go to the Lakers and be, you know, the team outside the Eastern Conference who, you know, were the team to play against. They were the team you wanted to see when they came to town, and it was Kobe, and he wanted to cut the Sixers' hearts out, you know, in the finals. And there was this admiration and hate for him at the same time, because he was he one of us, but he wasn't one of us, but he was so great, and he was playing for this other team and winning championships, you know, and add the other layer onto it that he came out the same draft year that Allen Iverson did. You know, and he didn't go number one. Allen Iverson did. And are you really going to argue with the Sixers for taking Allen Iverson number one? But look at who they could have had later in the draft. It just, there were so many layers to it. But yeah, I agree with you completely. When he came to town, it was an event every time.
Speaking with Mike Sielski, Inquirer.com. When you talk about 2001, I know that's where a lot of us will go back to in our memory banks and kind of look at Kobe and the way he played that series. And other than the cut your heart out moment, which is, I know, 17-year-old Mark Farzetta really hated Kobe Bryant for that. But really, when you think about it, that was just the type of player he was. But as a whole, when you think about 2001, what pops to mind?
I mean, that obviously pops to mind. You know, it's the only thing that pops to mind. It was as if, you know, the Sixers, you think about the Sixers winning game one and everybody around here getting so excited for it. And because the Lakers hadn't won a playoff game, hadn't lost a playoff game heading into that finals. They were, you know, they were 12-0, I think. And, you know, Iverson steps over Tyronn Lue and everybody here goes bananas and thinks, okay, maybe the Sixers have a shot here. And then Kobe and Shaq just snuff that out so quickly over the next four games. It's like, no, guys, forget it. And I think that series, you know, is emblematic of really, you know, around here, what we talk about when we talk about Kobe as a player is he to me is the ultimate example of the guy who, if he had played here, no one would have been loved more than him. Nobody, because of the way he played, because of what he did. But the fact that he didn't play here and the fact that he played in a city and for a franchise that Philadelphians don't care for, regard as a rival, and have this kind of grudging respect for, made him one of the most, you know, hated in some ways players, because he was getting the better of us. He was winning five championships on the other coast, and he was the most competitive guy. And yeah, he wanted to cut your heart out and all of that. You know, it's just funny how it worked out that way.
Speaking with Mike Sielski, Inquirer.com. Last thing for you. Do you remember the first time you saw him, Mike?
First time I saw him?
Saw Kobe Bryant.
Yeah. I mean, I saw him I on the highlights on TV, watching local news, this kid at Lower Merion, and knowing that he was Joe Bryant's son, and there was a, you know, a lineage there, a legacy to Philadelphia basketball. It was on TV. First time I saw him, yeah.
Mike, I can't thank you enough for coming on with us, man. Again, phenomenal piece. Definitely check it out, Inquirer.com. Also follow Mike Sielski on Twitter as well. Mike, thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
Appreciate it. Yeah, it really is a great piece. I mean, that's how I, like most people, local news. Kid Kobe Bryant, Lower Marion. Yeah. His dad played for the Sixers. I didn't know who the hell Jelly Bean Bryant was.
I did. I saw him play. No, yeah, it's funny. I saw him play. My high school coach was drafted by the Sixers and got to know Joe Bryant well, and I knew a lot of stories about Joe Bryant. And like I said, in you know, the 95-ish area, when the rumors started coming that Joe Bryant might be an assistant at LaSalle, and then you heard, well, his son's pretty good, that's when that's when it started to go through the roof. And it was just, you know, you feel an attachment there because not that I knew him at all, except for the, you know, couple of times that we spoke. That's where it kind of took off, that you knew of this kid, Kobe Bryant.
He did it was a special Muse, I believe is what it was. And it was all about his life and coming back from injury and rehabbing and going to Italy, going overseas at a young age, coming back. And one thing you didn't think of was kind of how he had to re-assimilate to American life. Like, wherever you go, if you go there in your formative years, you come back and you try to fit in right before you, like, hit puberty. Remember how much fun that was growing up? Imagine coming back, Trey, imagine coming back to the United States, totally different culture from what you're used to, all the friends you made, and your only commonality is basketball. Like, this is a guy that didn't know what clothes to wear to school in order to fit in.
Yeah.
I can't imagine the transition he must have had to go through. It's a wild, wild thing.
Yeah, absolutely, man. But, I don't know. I'm lost for words, man, still.
I really think we have failed. And look, these are all people on the radio. Bob, you were a writer forever. Like, you wrote a great story on Inquirer.com a while back, and you were nice enough to share that with us on Twitter again. We have failed as humans in coming up with words for just to describe how shocking what happened yesterday was.
Yeah, you know, being the older of you got of all of us here, the older guy here, you know, there are events that you'll never forget. And I had some people tweeting at me yesterday, oh, what are some of the things? This is right up there. You know, this is right up there. And when Kobe was here for his last game, what I loved about it in his press conference before the game, how he mentioned Scotty Rego, who has been the equipment manager for the Sixers 4 years. And he mentioned Alan Lumpkin, who is Mr. Do Everything for the Sixers 4 years. And he talked about them, about when he was a kid and how he knew them, and they always treated him well when he came back to town. So of course, right after the press conference, I run to Scotty Rego, and he tells the story of when Kobe was like 16, 17 years old, and Rego is unloading Gatorades into his truck, because that's what he did working for the Sixers at the time, and Kobe's sitting there waiting for a ride home, like any 16 or 17 year old, and he comes running over to Rego, and he starts helping him put the stuff in his trunk, and he says, I gotta ask you, what do I have to do? What do I have to do to become, you know, one of the greats in the NBA? And Rego says, just keep doing what you're doing. And Rego was funny, and I quoted him in the story. He said, yeah, and I gave him really good advice. I told him to go to college and learn how to play basketball for a couple of years. He goes, so obviously he didn't listen to me. But the fact that Kobe just comes back and mentions those behind-the-scene guys and what they meant to him, that was special. And Lump, afterwards, I went to talk to him, and he was choked up about how much, because Kobe went right to those guys first when he got there, said, I couldn't have done this career without you guys. And that means to me more than him, you know, talking to the Michael Jordans of the world. You know what I mean? It was just, that was a special night.
Coming up, we'll hear from Vince Carter. We'll let you hear what Vince Carter had to say yesterday after the Hawks game last night. And to me, it is my favorite thing that I heard about Kobe Bryant yesterday.
And he's a man that spanned, I believe, four decades in the NBA.
So he knows.
Yeah. I mean, he's actually a great person to talk about the perspective of Kobe's impact.
It really is. This really was amazing what I heard from Vince Carter yesterday. 610-632-0975. That's what's coming up in a minute here on 97.5, The Fanatic.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Really just a wild, insane, depressing day yesterday as we all wrap our head around the death of Kobe Bryant. And when we started the show, I said that guys like this can't be killed. They're not killed. They die. They grow old and die. We enjoy their legacy and their memory, and we watch the highlights, and we see them come back for all-star games and different appearances around the league. Similar to like how my generation would know Bill Russell more than anything else. He's around the NBA all the time. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch one of his 11 championships, but I know Bill Russell, and I've watched the highlights, and his legacy has grown as his life has gone on. You don't read Lakers legend dead at 41.
Yeah. It's just like when you see Jordan, when you see, you know, Barkley, when you see just anybody, Dr. J, mm-hmm. you know, these are guys that you feel like, you know what, you'll see them forever, and you expect it to be able to have that same type of attachment with Kobe. You know, that's why it's just so shocking that he's gone.
So we know his resume, 5-time NBA champion, 2-time finals MVP, MVP of 08 of the league. One year he averaged 35 points per game in 06. I think that was the year he also scored the 81 points in one game, which is the most since obviously the 100 points by Will Chamberlain. But you know the guy's resume, 2-time Olympic gold medalist, but you also just think of him today as a father that died next to his daughter, which is, even if he wasn't Kobe Bryant with that resume, your heart goes out. Mm-hmm. And you think about the Altobelli family, who mm-hmm. was also on board that flight, a husband, a wife, and their daughter.
Two kids left behind. And two
other children.
Brutal.
That now don't have a sister and don't have a mom and dad.
Yeah.
That's the thing. We all relate to the family aspect of that. We all remember Kobe because we watched his play on the court, and we knew about him growing up here in Philadelphia. But what we identify with above anything else is the family aspect of it. And I can't remember too many instances where you had such an outpouring of hug your loved ones. Like when Roy Halladay died, I remember a little bit of that. It was even more so in this case because there were children involved. There were young men and women involved in this accident. And that's what really resonated with a lot more people, is the fact that the family aspect of this hits closer to home than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that we all have our loved ones in our lives. And I was around a lot of loved ones yesterday when all this news broke, and everybody was shocked. We were all waiting for a photo of Kobe to emerge on social media, where like he's holding, like whenever there's a death, a rumored death, the person like tweets a picture of them holding up a newspaper for that day, hey, everything's good. And we were all waiting for that moment, and obviously it never came. And then stories got falsely reported. And to any young either journalist or broadcast journalist listening, it never pays to, you don't get a trophy for being number one and being inaccurate. TMZ put it out there. The Sheriff's Department of LA County didn't want to even put out the names. Like, it's still, like, I don't even know if it's confirmed yet, but as of the news conference yesterday, after the NBA was already celebrating Kobe Bryant's life, the LA County Sheriff's Department didn't even want to confirm who was on the flight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as of right now, the pilot's not known. Names have been released, and Kobe and Gianna Bryant are two of those names, and the Altobelli family are also among them. And you think about it, like, the pilot's not even confirmed. To me, it's an insane thing. But again, what we will all wrap our head around is the fact that, or trying to wrap our heads around, is the fact that it was his daughter on board flight with him as they perished. And yesterday, Vince Carter, I thought, did one of the best possible jobs you could do in memorializing not only the basketball player that he played against for all those years, but also the father he later saw on the sidelines. This is Vince Carter yesterday after the Hawks game.
You can see a man who was such a fierce competitor at peace when he was sitting there, when he sits there courtside now, because it's not the Mamba competing against whoever. It's dad teaching his daughter how to the ins and outs of the game and how he sees it and how she can learn to break the game down. That's what I saw, and I think that's what a lot of people can see, and I think that's where it catches the basketball world off guard more than anything, because we all saw it. And for those of us who played against him, who knew him, I think that's what kind of is gut-wrenching more than anything because of his happiness, because of that conversation I had with him telling me, he's like, I'm at peace, I'm happy, I'm at my happiest. All these championships he's won, MVPs, 81, he was at his happiest in retirement.
We talked about Kobe Bryant coaching his daughter a couple of months ago. Because remember he was talking about that other girl on the team that like missed a practice?
Oh, yeah.
And we were like, damn, Mamba. Man, it's girls basketball, man. Young girls basketball, didn't you have a dance or something? Dance is more important.
Right.
And we're like, damn, Mamba mentality coaching, you know, 12-year-old girls basketball.
Even the picture he had the girls take.
Yeah.
Yeah, when they were all mean mugging.
I'm like, what? Kobe had these girls looking like, bring it.
Yeah, right.
But all the other teams should be scared.
When our daughters grow up, Mark, I can't think of somebody else I would rather them learn the game of basketball from and how to compete from than Kobe Bryant. I mean, honestly, who else would you want to teach your daughters the game?
So I was thinking about that. And, Bob, you talked about originality earlier. And it's really odd. If I could say that one player was a carbon copy of another player in terms of style, I would say it would be Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan. Like, really, when you talk about their games, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like, it was fingerprints is what it was. It was a mirror image. Yet there was still originality in it. There was something about it was just different. And it wasn't just that, yeah, obviously there were different people, but there was something about it that was just a little bit different. With Kobe, you could see it a little bit more on his face that he wanted to cut your heart out. With Michael, it was like, and here's your heart. Like, it was already out. It was different yet the same. There's a lot of that in Kawhi Leonard. It's more robotic, but it's a lot of the same type of game. You talk about all-world defensive players, Jordan, Kobe, and Kawhi. You talk about how they were, anybody in front of them, forget about it. It's all about the game. Kawhi Leonard not even shaking the hand or fist bumping his teammate before going out there on the court and just pointing to the court and being like, yeah, we got to go out there now. What are you doing?
Time to work.
It's a very interesting thing. There was so much originality yet so much similarity in their games. And that's really the thing. For guys, like I always said, I didn't experience 80s Jordan, who was a guy that lost a lot. He was a guy that couldn't get to win the big game, right? They got beat out by the Pistons, right? The 80s Pistons, the bad boy Pistons. But then in the 90s is when he started to win, and that's the Jordan I remember. Kobe was the guy I got to enjoy from start to finish.
Yeah.
I mean, enjoy. Respect, I should say. Because we lost at the hands of Kobe Bryant, those Lakers in 01, as a city. But we look back on those times, and you just think about what a wild ride that must have been to go from a guy that was starting out here at Lower Merion to a guy that had one of the greatest NBA careers ever. I mean, think about this for a second. Are we ever going to see a five-time NBA champion and an Oscar winner? Like, is that going to happen?
No.
Like, think about the versatility there.
Is LeBron going to get in the movies?
You never know what he will inspire.
Right.
Yeah.
So many different aspects of his life, he really hit close to home with so many different people. But the number one thing that people will really look at is the fact that he was a father.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they died the way they did. It's something that everyone will think about. Everyone will always remember. I mean, look, we'll remember the good stuff on the court, but we'll think of the tragedy also.
That's what hit me most yesterday was when, you know, you break it down. He died taking his daughter to her travel basketball game. I can relate to that. I've taken my daughter to 100 travel, soccer, basketball, whatever it is. You know, that's where you're relatable to it. And it's funny, Vince Carter talking about the fierce competitor that Kobe was, and I think those are two words that just match him perfectly. There was one time, and last night as I'm doing notes and I'm calling people and all that stuff, there was one time I thought I saw a chink in that fierce competitor armor. And it was almost 10 years ago to this day. It was January 29th, 2010. When Iverson came back to play for the Sixers, you remember that? He only had like a 25-game run. All right, so he comes back, he's playing. The Lakers come into town. Iverson obviously is kind of a shell of himself, but in the third quarter, Iverson goes off for 15 points. And it's like, oh my God, the place is going crazy. And you have that Kobe factor there too. Iverson goes off for 15 in the third after only had two in the first half. And the Sixers build a lead and it's like, oh my God, Iverson's back. It's the old Iverson. And matching him basket for basket is Kobe in that third quarter. Kobe had 14 in that third quarter. They come out for the fourth quarter and Kobe goes over to Derek Fisher. I will never forget this. Goes over to Derek Fisher. Nope, I got him. And he covered Iverson. Forget lights out. Done. Iverson couldn't go anywhere. He couldn't get a shot off. Kobe smothered him like a blanket the likes I've never seen. And it was just I'm watching him the whole time and I'm like, oh my God, he's good. But at the same time, I was like, it looked to me, a tinge of him felt bad putting Iverson in his place. Like, all right, old man, stop. This is my game. And I will never forget that game, guys. Like, that is etched in my brain forever. That was a Kobe moment that right in front of us played out.
But, man, when you talk about the similarities in game, a lot of people always compare it to Jordan. I don't think there's anybody out there that have the... Kobe is probably had the smoothest game, had that silky smooth movement. His mannerisms on the court was just like this era of Jordan.
Yeah.
And I mean, to me, I was like, because you look at LeBron's game, he's a little bit more rigid downhill. But no one had that same fadeaway, that same smoothness like Jordan had, like Kobe would emulate.
It was grace, what it was. It was absolute grace. No matter what the situation was in the game, he was a very graceful player. Now, Jamie, I actually heard you mention this in the 5 o'clock hour. But you're talking about redoing the logo from Jerry West to something more modern.
I know the NBA's kind of batted that idea around of modernizing the logo. And, you know, it could be an incredibly fitting way to honor him.
If you went with Kobe, though, would you go shaved Kobe? Would you go fro Kobe? Would you go goateed Kobe?
I think you'd go shaved. What would be the outline? Fadeaway.
My idea was the shoulders back a little bit like a fadeaway
jumper.
Yeah,
Kobe.
It just says that underneath with an exclamation point. Yeah. NBA Kobe.
It would be very cool. I saw Chris Mannix from SI tweet out yesterday a cool idea for the All-Star game, and that would be just have one team as all number 24, have the other team as all number 8.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
I think that would be pretty surreal to watch.
And to change your numbers and both your numbers are up in the rafters.
That is amazing. In L.A.? I mean, in L.A., you're talking about a franchise that has Kareem, Magic, Jerry West, Wilt Chamberlain, Elgin Baylor. I mean, like 5 of the top 10 players of all time probably played for the Lakers. And Kobe has 2 numbers retired by him.
He's got 2 numbers retired by him. He's their all-time leading scorer. He's their all-time leading games played, steals. And I think he's second only to Magic Johnson in franchise history for assists. And by the way, to tell you how good Magic was, and obviously a different position, point guard versus a shooting guard, but he had 4,000 fewer assists than Magic. Like, Magic is in first place in the Lakers by 4,000 assists.
Yeah, just leave it at second place.
Like, it's just crazy. It's like, no one was catching that anyway.
I got a text from a buddy from mine in the NBA yesterday saying the way that Kobe reinvented himself every year was just unbelievable. He came as a high flyer, a dunker, all that, and then worked on that perimeter game. He said in the text, never saw anyone work harder. Mm. And this guy was around him an awful lot. So that's just a little insight to him also.
The helicopter went down. There were a lot of eyewitness accounts on social media. People started to put it together. They saw a helicopter go down in Calabasas across the street from where a lot of people lived. And they were putting it together that it was Kobe Bryant. And they were saying, wow, Kobe died right there. And they're looking at the wreckage on their phones. There was an account out there from a woman who was walking her dog, who lived in Calabasas for 10 years, and talked about it, how she heard what sounded like a really low helicopter come over the houses, and then she heard nothing, and then heard a loud boom, and then that's when she realized the helicopter had gone down. And it was about 40 minutes into the flight that it actually, that it went down with Kobe Bryant, Gianna Bryant, the Altobelli family as well, and an unknown pilot perished in this accident. And it was supposedly foggy conditions. Some people surprised that they were flying in those conditions to begin with, en route to a basketball game for the daughters. The Altobelli family had a husband and wife and a daughter on that helicopter. And Kobe had obviously his daughter, Gianna, one of his 4 daughters. But one of the things that I know a lot of people are going to look at as the thing they identify with most in this story, again, is the fact that he was a father. And we let you hear Vince Carter talk about that transition of watching that fierce competitor, that Mamba mentality in Kobe Bryant, transition from that to just a dad trying to teach his daughter the game. Well, Kobe, I believe this was just last week, was on Jimmy Kimmel. And he got asked about when he goes out with his daughter, Gianna, about carrying on the legacy of his legacy in the NBA. And here's a great story Kobe tells about his daughter, Gianna.
Do you think your daughter might want to play in the WNBA?
She does, for sure.
She does?
This kid, man.
Wouldn't that be great?
Dude, man, I'm telling you. The best thing that happens is when we go out and come up to me and she'll be standing next to me and they'll be like,
hey, you got to have a boy. You and V got to have a boy, man. Have somebody carry on the tradition, the legacy. She's like, oi, I got this. You know, boy, for that, I got
Now, that's what you call confidence right there.
Little Mamba.
Yeah, really. Let's get to Eric in Richboro. What's up, Eric?
Hey, how are you guys?
All right, man.
Rough day hearing that news yesterday. I was born in 91, so my first real memory is the end of the Jordan era. And then Iverson and Kobe, like, going head-to-head kind of all the time, always looking forward to that. And I'm a school teacher. I teach actually health and phys ed. And I do the whole, like, Kobe, when you shoot a ball, do that fadeaway. And my students don't realize that I've been doing that since they were in diapers for the first time. And it's just hard to believe. So I'm paying homage. Third time in my life, I've worn a Jordan jersey, a throwback Ken Griffey Jr. jersey, and today I am wearing a Kobe Bryant jersey to school today. And I'm just going to talk to my kids about, like, make sure you let people know that you love them and you care about them, because you never know what might happen, especially teaching in North Philly. A lot of crap goes down up here, and we got to make sure we tell everyone who we love them.
Mm-hmm. No, that's something that I really don't think could be said enough. When it comes to what happened yesterday, the fact that it was a father and a daughter, and then another mother and father and daughter, I think everyone had that thought yesterday, and rightfully so. And I know with my family, I certainly took part in that extra hug.
Yeah, it's definitely really upsetting to hear, and something that'll take me a little bit. It reminds me of the whole Roy Halladay situation, and just something that will stick with me forever. And the memories he brought to me. I remember in eighth grade, we used to practice our basketball team practice in the morning before school and after school. And I remember on, I believe it was January 22nd, 2006, he scored 81 points. And just going to practice, and everyone like, did you hear about Kobe Bryant scoring 81 points? Like, unfathomable thing that I'll never forget.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, and Eric, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate you sharing that with us. If I remember correctly, the Lakers were trailing at halftime to the Raptors of that game. Kobe, I think, had 26 in the first half and 55 in the second.
He did have 55.
What the hell?
Somebody unearthed one of the best ESPN commercials last night. It's Kobe, and he's at the Palm Steakhouse, and the waiter comes over, and Jalen Rose walks up to the table, and he's kind of like acknowledging Kobe. And the waiter says, you know, what can I get for you, Mr. Bryant? He says, you know, I'll take a martini. And he goes, would you like some olives in that martini? And he looks at Jalen Rose, and he goes, yeah, how about 81? And then there's like silence for 5 seconds as Jalen Rose is kind of looking at him like, and he goes, nah, I'm just kidding. 2's fine. he knows what I'm talking about.
Unbelievable.
And he looks at Jalen Rose. It's hilarious.
Unbelievable. According to CBS LA, the pilot's name, Era Zoban, I believe is how you say it, was released as well. And another, it looks like another mother and daughter on the flight as well. It certainly was a number one, first and foremost, a family tragedy that happened, and looking like it involved at least 4 families. Just absolutely awful. 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. Coming up at 8:30 today, we'll be joined by Daryl Reynolds of Lower Merion, graduate of Lower Merion, also Villanova national champion in 2016, also assistant coach with Lower Merion now. Help us remember the impact Kobe Bryant had on the Lower Merion community. I know he was remembered yesterday at the high school and his gymnasium that was named after him. Talk to Daryl Reynolds coming up at 8:30, 9 o'clock, D. Lineham, right here of 97.5, The Fanatic, and then Mark Jackson of NBC Sports Philadelphia, who remembered Kobe so fondly yesterday. We'll talk to Mark Jackson, who usually joins us on Thursdays. He's kind enough to join us today to talk about and also help us remember Kobe Bryant. Time of the Fanatic is 7:42.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Coming up in this segment, we'll let you hear from Greg Popovich again after last night's San Antonio Spurs game. I think he really did sum it up. And I was a little surprised that the NBA was playing games. I just know that if you were looking for more information about what was going on with Kobe, if you were going around to some of the regular sports channels, one of them had the Pro Bowl, for instance, and ESPN had the Pro Bowl out there. And you could even hear in the broadcast, in the no lie, maybe 10 seconds, like, they didn't want to do it. Yeah. They didn't want to do the game. Like, I other things that have happened, tragedies that have happened, I remember players coming out and saying they didn't feel like playing. Like, that was on a more global scale, a more a scale different than the one we were looking at yesterday. But in the NBA, I almost expected the commissioner to announce that games would be canceled. And they didn't do that, which in like, I guess looking back on it yesterday, okay, probably the right move considering the way the players handled it. And I give them so much credit. And I believe it started in the Raptors game where they took a 24-second shot clock violation to honor Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, Fred VanVleet got the ball and just everybody knew.
Both teams.
Yeah, they just everybody just stood.
And then it went to another level when one team would take a 24-second shot clock violation in honor of Kobe Bryant's number 24, and the other would take an 8-second backcourt violation in honor of Kobe Bryant's number 8. And then yesterday, Trae Young, who I later found out was Gianna Bryant's favorite player.
Yeah, how about that?
Wore the number 8.
And you saw Trae Young before the game. His mom was in the building in Atlanta, and he went out during warm-ups and just hugged and cried his mom for like what seemed like 2-3 minutes. And it's, you know, you saw guys like not Wilson Chandler, but he had a tribute, Tyson Chandler, you know, sobbing openly on the bench. Like, these guys that played with him, I mean, even if they didn't play with him, he inspired a whole new younger generation of NBA guys, and it was moving to watch yesterday.
And to react so appropriately, I think, as a league of players was nothing short of spectacular. And when you see guys find out about what had happened to Kobe Bryant and the other passengers on that flight, you look at some of the people that reacted, like you mentioned Tyson Chandler and those guys and how they reacted. And when they got the news, you could read their lips. They're saying, like, helicopter? What? And then it kind of sinks in. And then you see moments of silence throughout the NBA. You see those tributes on the floor. And then afterwards, and even in some pre-game speeches, you heard guys like Doc Rivers just barely be able to put words together because they were so affected by this. And one of the things I think Doc Rivers said that was so interesting was how well he got to know Kobe Bryant, the dad, instead of the player, and how he got to know him more even after his playing career. It's like over the last 3-4 years, I feel like I've gotten to know him more so than I've ever gotten to know him because that's when I saw him on the sideline. That's where he was there with his daughter.
Yeah, that hit home yesterday. Doc is a great, great guy. And when he was with Boston and the Sixers in Boston were having their series, he and Doug Collins were very close. I got to know Doc and so enjoyed talking to him because he's so real and so natural. And to see, that was one of the first reactions I saw yesterday was Doc Rivers. And that hit home. That Doc spoke for the NBA yesterday, just like Pop did also, but the emotion that Doc showed, that was just true, legitimate, and pretty much how everybody felt yesterday in the NBA.
Yeah, Austin Rivers, you know, Doc's son, you saw when he found out in pregames, just started openly sobbing on the court during the layup line, and wow.
You also have Tiger Woods finding out at Torrey Pines yesterday.
Yeah.
And there was a moment, I believe he was walking with his cat. Well, he'd heard people yelling, "Do it for Mamba."
Yeah. I thought about him because, you know, if there was ever an athlete that was Mamba tough and had that mental focus on par with the Kobe Bryant, it was probably Tiger Woods.
Well, yeah.
And I thought, like, I tried to put myself in Tiger's shoes, like, to be trying to focus on golf when you get that news, because, you know, he was a California kid. You know, I'm sure he loved Kobe Bryant, too. To get that news while trying to focus on a game, it has to be, I mean, even the toughest of mentalities can't focus during that.
Yeah. I had the golf on, you know, we were all switching around, I'm sure, but I went to the golf, tried to find the best coverage of it, and I just so happened to get the opening where Jim Nance came on, and I think he was with Nick Faldo. And Nance was just perfect, and it kind of made me think, yeah, the NBA should go on. He said, obviously, we're joining you at a tough time, and he went on about Kobe, and then he said, and they had like a moment of silence. Nance and Faldo didn't say anything, and then Nance came back, and he said, but we do have to cover a golf tournament here today, and that's what we have to do. And it really made me think, like, Kobe looking down is probably like, damn straight you play those basketball games today.
Right,
and I really felt that more than any other time in my life, that that was the right thing to do yesterday as far as, you know, an outsider looking in.
Like, you think about guys that, you think about horrible things that happen, people passing, and you think about, oh, it's what they would have wanted. And sometimes, like, if I'm being real, you think about whatever you got to tell yourself to justify your actions. Fine.
Agree. Mm-hmm. Totally agree.
But yesterday, it was Kobe would throw a fit if guys didn't play. Like, are you kidding me? A game that I could have sat there with my daughter and taken in and taught her something about the game, and you're not going to play? Hey, yeah, thanks for the tributes, but you get on the court.
Because somebody else's father, some other father, daughter are there to watch you. I could hear Kobe saying it. So it's incumbent upon you to play because they're there to watch you. I totally felt it was the right thing to do yesterday.
Yeah, coming up in a little bit, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar had a great tweet he put out yesterday. It really just, I think he said it all. He absolutely said it all. But here is Greg Popovich yesterday after the Spurs game, where he thanked the media for not going into the locker room and kind of just letting the players have their play, you know, have their, you know, have their moment. But also, he memorialized Kobe Bryant in a great way. Here it is.
Good game, tough loss, who cares? Most importantly, appreciate you all letting the locker room be tonight. Everybody's pretty emotional about the tragedy with Kobe, and all of us know what a great player he was, but he went beyond great playing. He was a competitor that goes unmatched, and it's what made him as a player so attractive to everybody. That focus, that competitiveness, that will to win, and even more importantly than that, we all feel a deep sense of loss for what he meant to all of us in so many ways, and so many millions of people loved him for so many different reasons.
I love the idea of the All-Star game being the 28s versus the 8s versus the 24s. I think that would be an awesome thing.
Cool.
I don't know about changing the NBA logo, but something that the NBA could announce tomorrow is that it's not going to be East-West. It's going to be 24 versus 8.
That's incredibly cool. And Mark Cuban came out immediately last night, which I thought was really, really cool. And I believe, you know, I've seen somebody on Twitter say maybe the Sixers should do it, but I believe Bobby Jones is 24 is already retired, if
it
I'm
is.
Not mistaken.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Yeah, but the Mavericks retired the number 24, so nobody in Mavericks history will ever wear that again.
And wow.
That's an incredible tribute to a man who didn't even play for that organization.
Sixers could do 8.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.